Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
What causes a powerful aircraft to suddenly stall mid-flight? What can be done when a large passenger jet fails in such a way without warning? For many flights, these warning signals were the beginning of the end for hundreds of souls aboard them. Today, we examine 3 plane crashes that could have been avoided had more caution been taken. Today, on the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
United Express Flight 6291 is the first flight that we review on today's episode. It was a regularly scheduled United Express flight from Washington Dulles International Airport near Washington, D.C. to Port Columbus International Airport in Columbus, Ohio. It was a service operated by Atlantic Coast Airlines on behalf of United Express. Late on the night of January 7, 1994, the British aerospace Jetstream 41, operating as Flight 6291, stalled and crashed on approach to Port Columbus International Airport. The 2 pilots, the flight attendant, and 2 passengers died in the crash. The surviving passengers were a Taiwanese family of 3. Flight 6291 left the gate at Dulles at 9:58 p.m. for a 90-minute flight to Columbus. The crew were Captain Derek White, First Officer Anthony Samuels, and a flight attendant. There were 5 passengers on board. At 11:10 p.m., Columbus Approach Control was contacted. The captain advised the controller that the aircraft was descending through 13,200 feet to 11,000 feet. The controller assigned 285-degree heading to intercept the instrument landing system for runway 28L and cleared flight 6291 to 10,000 feet. An updated weather report at 11:15 p.m. reporting a cloud overcast 800 feet above the ground, visibility 2.5 miles. In light snow and fog, with wind 300 degrees at 4 knots. A runway 28L ILS approach clearance was given when the flight passed the Smuley final approach fix. The clearance to land on runway 28L was given 2 minutes later. The aircraft was descending through an altitude of 1,250 feet when the stick shaker activated and sounded for 3 seconds. After 1.5 seconds, the stick shaker sounded again. The aircraft continued to descend below the glide slope until it collided with a stand of trees in a high nose-up altitude. It came to rest upright in a commercial building, 1.5 miles short of the runway. After the impact, a fire started in or near the left engine, which spread to the rest of the aircraft. At least 4 of the passengers survived the crash. However, only 3 of family escaped before the aircraft was fully engulfed in flames. Though they were slowed by difficulty getting their seatbelts to release, the National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, investigated the crash and released its report on October 6, 1994. In the report, the crew and Atlantic Coast Airlines were faulted for the crash. The pilots followed a poorly planned and executed approach, then improperly responded to a stall warning and lacked experience in aircraft equipped with an electronic flight instrument system. Atlantic Coast failed to provide adequate stabilized approach criteria, suitable training simulators, and crew resource management training. In addition, the report recommended that the type of seatbelts used in the aircraft be removed from service on all airplanes, and that certification of future seatbelt designs include a test matching the conditions that were experienced during the incident. So I think this is one of those situations where it's something I fear quite often when landing in an airplane, is like the takeoff and the landing are my two worst parts. It's the dark side of Wikipedia today, stalling in the sky. We're going to be looking at three different aircraft disasters that ended, obviously, not well. If you like our program and would like to hear all of our advanced episodes, which are commercial-free, get our bonus final chapters and all that, please check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/darkside of Wikipedia, or just search Dark Side of Wikipedia on Patreon. $5 a month gets you access to all that, and your support keeps us on the air. It's Tony and Sean with you on today's episode of the program. Thoughts thus far?
Morning, folks. It's Captain Sean, First Officer Brewski. We appreciate you on board here this morning. We're going to go ahead and close up shop, take off. We're going to die today because on final approach, we're going to crash in some shrubbery. About 22 years later, there's going to be an episode about us, and it's called Dark Side of Wiki. Sit back, relax. We'll be wheels up in about 17 minutes.
I added a nice sound effect to your voice.
Oh, and give Marla a hard time back there when she's giving you your peanuts in high C. Of course, it's going to be her last flight as well because, well, she's going to be dead in about 36 minutes. So we'll get up to about 7,500. We're never going to hit cruising altitude because a flock of seagulls are going to be a little sassy. Fall into the turbine of the GE4000 engine. We're going to die. We're going to hit a Whataburger on the way down.
You're going to hit a Whataburger?
And we're going to lead the 5, 6, and 10 on Eyewitness News 13.1 digital channel. So once again, we appreciate you hopping aboard Death Airlines Express, a regional feeder to American, and we'll be up momentarily.
That's lovely. So,
I think this sadly is a situation, to your point, first of all, good day to you, Tony. Mm-hmm. Yeah, taking off and landing, because essentially the plane flies itself. What I think this situation, the flight crew knew what's up, but unfortunately you really can't develop experience in an emergency unless you've gone through an emergency. You look back at Captain Sully, who landed the plane on the Hudson River. He was in the Air Force. He was a fighter pilot. He knew how to fly under holy shit conditions. And even if pilots are listening to this, you're amazing at your craft. You go through hundreds of thousands of hours in flight simulators and test flights and this, that, or the other. And you obviously go through some simulated emergency situations. But unless you're in that and you're about ready to shit yourself and you recover, sadly, all too often, once shit hits the fan, you almost try to overcorrect. Similarly, if you're driving down the road and you hit black ice. And unfortunately, this may have been the case in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, the pilots on this plane were very young. We're talking a 20-some-year-old and a 30-some-year-old. So, I mean, you got to start somewhere, obviously, and a lot of them do start on these kind of commuter places. But it sounds like experience really was had quite a bit to do with what happened here with this crash.
And unfortunately, I mean, what's your thoughts on if it's your time to go? It's your time to go. Do you put any, I mean, those passengers on that plane, guess what? That's just how it was kind of that was their that was their plan. That pilot with that little experience and those passengers, or how do you chalk that up?
I don't know. I mean, there's ways of looking at it. You know, this is like, we're going to get deep. Like manifest destiny, where you have no choice in like when you're going to die. It's like it's already scheduled for you, like Final Destination-esque. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of, we have choices that we can make. And, you know, you make a choice to get on a small commuter plane, which by statistic has a higher frequency of crashing. It doesn't mean don't go on the plane. It just means you're putting yourself at a bit of a higher risk than you would if you did something else. Although driving does hold a higher risk of death versus flying, if you're looking statistically at it. So, I mean, you can run your life through every statistic imaginable. And sometimes you may end up being one of those statistics. You may be surprised. You may get one of the rare ones where you're the one in 1 million or whatever. Or you may be the one in, you know, 20 that dies when you strap yourself to a railroad track. I mean, again, a choice. So, I mean, I think there certainly are freak accidents that just happen. There's statistics. There's odds of death in virtually every single thing that we do, from walking down the sidewalk to skydiving to whatever. I'm not saying flying in an airplane is an inherently risky activity. It's really not. But everything in life is a choice. So, you know, I don't know if I completely buy into the, you know, if it's going to happen, you know, if it's going to happen, it was already planned for you. I don't know if I believe that. But you're right. If you're there and it happens, you ain't got no choice in the matter. So really, why worry about it? If you're going to get on the plane and it crashes, you have no, you're not going to save the plane. There's nothing you can do to fix it at that point. So why worry about it? I do subscribe to that, because there's so many things we can worry about, but why worry about it if we're going to live our life? I mean, you can lock yourself in a room and eventually you'll die because you don't get enough physical activity and sunlight. So it's just kind of like how you want to live your life, live your life. And you're going to die some way, somehow. Maybe it'll be old age. Maybe it'll be going down in you know, a commuter flight.
What's very interesting, if you have a loved one that was on this flight, which there were only eight,
yeah,
five passengers, three crew. You want to talk about the... Don't worry or don't think about what you can't control. There were three survivors.
Yeah.
So imagine, of the eight people, three of them survived. So what luck would you have? Oh, my God, my husband was on that flight. Oh, my sister was on that flight. Well, there were three survivors. Holy hell, that would have been a nail-biting situation to wait to find out. Okay, are they one of the five or one of the three?
Yeah. Because you're sitting there waiting and wondering and, yeah. That's one of those things where you'd almost want to die. I think if you were the family on the ground, especially if you loved your family, you cared about them, and there's someone, you know, you're sitting there at the airport waiting to pick them up, and you find out their plane just crashed. That time window between hearing that news and then finding out, did they survive? Are they one of the three? I think I would end up in the hospital in that time period for like having a heart attack or something from the stress of it.
Yeah, it's very interesting how people handle trauma. I think personally, I would just shut down and almost become numb, because when something hits you so, it almost, your emotional o-meter. To some, it goes sky high.
Yeah.
To others, it almost has a kill switch that it prevents you from becoming, to your point, having a heart attack.
I mean, it's different depending on the trauma for me. Like, if there's something I can control, like let's say somebody got hit by a car, okay, and they're being rushed to the hospital, and I can be right there, and I could be right by their side, and I'm trying to help them through it. I can be calm and be very good in that sort of a situation. In a situation where I have absolutely no control whatsoever, that's where I'm the worst, because that's where my anxiety just takes off, because you can't do anything. And there's, if I can be helpful, if I can be productive, if I can feel like I'm in some even just little hair of control of the situation, I can hold on to that and I can make my way through it pretty strong in a bad situation. But something like this, where it's just like, now you get to wait to find out if your loved one won the death lottery. That to me seems like one of the most anxiety provoking situations that would be so traumatic.
It's interesting how you have so much control over your emotions in any situation, but your body almost takes over depending upon the situation. For example, I'm using a pair of scissors that don't work. I lose my shit. I lose a job that I've had for 6 years and ultimately have no income. I go sit on a park bench and take deep breaths. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how the two different situations, and in that, finding out if your loved one is alive or dead on a plane that has crashed, I'm just crossing the fingers that we don't ever have to answer that question of how you truly would act in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say for sure, but I know how my emotions work in different things. And I mean, it's different for everybody. Some may be the exact opposite. We have another one. We're going to look at Colgan Air Flight 3407 as we continue on with the program. This one was marketed as Continental Connection under the code share agreement with Continental Airlines. It was a scheduled passenger flight from Newark, New Jersey to Buffalo, New York, which crashed on Thursday, February 12, 2009. The aircraft, a Bombardier Dash 8 Q400, entered an aerodynamic stall from which it did not recover and crashed into a house in Clarence Center, New York at 10:17 p.m., killing all 49 passengers and crew on board, as well as one person inside the house. The National Transportation Safety Board conducted an accident investigation and published a final report on Tuesday, February 2nd, 2010, which found the probable cause to be the pilot's inappropriate response to stall warnings. As of April 2021, Flight 3407 is the most recent aviation incident resulting in mass casualties involving a U.S.-based airline. Families of the incident victims lobbied the U.S. Congress to enact more stringent regulations for regional carriers and to improve the scrutiny of safe operating procedures and the working conditions of pilots. The Airline Safety and Federal Aviation Administrative Extension Act of 2010 required some of these regulation changes. Colgan Air Flight 3407 was marketed as Continental Connection Flight 3407. It was delayed 2 hours, departing at 9:18 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, en route from Newark Liberty International Airport to Buffalo Niagara International Airport. The twin-engine turboprop Bombardier Dash 8 Q400 FAA Registry N200WQ was manufactured in 2008 for delivery to Colgan. It was delivered to Colgan on April 16th, 2008. This was the first fatal accident for a Colgan Air passenger flight since the company was founded in 1991. One previous repositioning flight with no passengers crashed offshore of Cape Cod, Massachusetts, in August of 2003, killing both of the crew on board. The only prior accident involving a Colgan Air passenger flight occurred at LaGuardia Airport when another plane collided with the Colgan aircraft while taxiing, resulting in minor injuries to a flight attendant. Captain Marvin Renslow, 47, of Lutz, Florida, was a pilot in command, and Rebecca Lynn Shaw, 24, of Maple Valley, Washington, served as the first officer. The cabin crew consisted of two flight attendants. Captain Renslow was hired in September of 2005 and had accumulated 3,379 total flight hours, with 111 hours as captain on the Q400. First Officer Shaw was hired in January of 2008 and had 2,244 hours, 774 of them in turbine aircraft, including the Q400. Two Canadian passengers, one Chinese passenger, and one Israeli passenger were on board. The remaining 41 passengers, as well as the crew members, were American. Shortly after the flight was cleared for an instrument landing system approach to runway 23 at Buffalo Niagara International Airport, it disappeared from radar. The weather consisted of light snow and fog with a wind of 15 knots. The deciding system had been turned on 11 minutes after takeoff. Shortly before the crash, the pilots discussed significant ice buildup on the aircraft's wings and windshield. Two other aircraft reported icing conditions around the time of the crash. The last radio transmission from the flight occurred when the first officer acknowledged a routine instruction to change to tower radio frequency. The plane was 3 miles northeast of the radio beacon KLUMP at that time. The crash occurred 41 seconds after that last transmission. Since ATC Approach Control was unable to get any further response from the flight, the assistance of Delta Airlines Flight 1998 and U.S. Airways Flight 1452 was requested. Neither was able to spot the missing aircraft. Following the clearance for final approach, landing gear and flaps were extended. The flight data recorder indicated the airspeed had slowed to 145 knots. The captain then called for the flaps to be increased to 15 degrees. The airspeed continued to slow to 135 knots. 6 seconds later, the aircraft's stick shaker activated, warning of an impending stall as the speed continued to slow to 131 knots. The captain responded by abruptly pulling back on the control column, followed by increasing thrust to 75% power instead of lowering the nose and applying full power, which was the proper stall recovery technique. That improper action pitched the nose up even further, increasing both the G-load and the stall speed. The stick pusher activated. The Q400 stick pusher applies an airplane nose-down control column input to decrease the wing's angle of attack after an aerodynamic stall. But the captain overrode the stick pusher and continued pulling back on the control column. The first officer retracted the flaps without consulting the captain, making recovery even more difficult. In its final moments, the aircraft pitched up 31 degrees, then pitched down 25 degrees, and rolled left 46 degrees, and snapped back to the right at 105 degrees. Occupants aboard experienced G-forces estimated at nearly 2G. The crew made no emergency declaration as they rapidly lost altitude and crashed into a private home at 6038 Long Street, about 5 miles from the end of the runway, with the nose pointed away from the airport. The aircraft burst into flames as the fuel tanks ruptured on impact, destroying the house of Douglas and Karen Wilneski and most of the plane. Douglas was killed, and his wife Karen and their daughter Jill managed to escape with minor injuries. Very little damage occurred to surrounding homes, though the lots in the area are only 60 feet wide. The home was close to the Clarence Center Fire Company, so emergency personnel were able to respond quickly. 2 firefighters were injured. 12 nearby houses were evacuated. How would you like to just be sitting in your house one day and suddenly, boom, an aircraft crashes into it? I always had that worry when I lived in Wichita because I was on the flight approach path to ICT Airport there.
You seriously did. You're not being sarcastic.
I know. I mean, it was like 5 miles away, but I was on the flight path. So you could go in my backyard and you could identify every airplane that was coming in. Like, Southwest is easy to identify, but you could read if it was United, Continental, UPS, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. They were low because you were on approach. It was kind of cool in some aspects to see that. It was noisy, but it was also kind of cool when you were flying in because I could see my house from the sky sometimes, which was kind of neat, from a fairly low altitude.
Sure, yeah. And currently where I reside, the airport is about a mile away. So the planes, I can't necessarily touch landing gear, but it is low.
At a mile, they're super low, yeah.
So I think they would have already crashed by the time they got to my place, knock on wood. Did you read a little bit more into this as far as what, first of all, the romance between the captain and first officer?
No.
As well as who was on the plane?
Well, we're going into the investigation portion next on the show.
I can tell some passengers.
Go ahead. That part I don't have on here, so go ahead with that part.
Okay, so the victims on this flight, which of course anybody on any airplane that happens to crash and you die is extremely unfortunate. But how about this? A gentleman who was killed in the September 11th attacks, wife, on a flight to Buffalo to celebrate her late husband's 58th birthday and award a scholarship in his memory of their high school they went to together.
What are your odds on that one?
She was on the flight. There's a picture 6 days before the flight. 6 days before the flight of her shaking then U.S. President Barack Obama's hand.
Wow.
So you're going to be able to, here's the thing. Please tell me the next 5 years of my life. The next 10 years. Well, it's going to be really shitty and really good. Your husband's going to die on September 11th. You're going to meet the president. Oh, but then you're going to die 6 days later.
God. What are your odds on that? And especially related to another airplane crash. You know, I mean, airplane crashes, number one, are not very statistically common. But to have two people of the same family in two totally different incidents.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And it's a smaller plane. There was only 50, yeah, less than 50 passengers. Not like this was a 747.
Yeah.
Or, wow. And then apparently the investigation, the romance, that is coming up after your 8-day forecast.
Oh, God.
Tell me, what do you got?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I haven't gotten there yet, but that should be interesting. Let's jump into that portion as we look at the romance and the investigation. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, began their inquiry on February 13th with a team of 14 investigators. Both the flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder were recovered and analyzed in Washington, D.C. Data extracted from the FDR revealed the aircraft went through severe pitch and roll oscillation shortly after the extension of flaps and landing gear, which was followed by the activation of the stick shaker stall warning system. The aircraft fell 800 feet and then crashed on a northeast heading opposite the approach heading to the airport. Occupants experienced estimated accelerations of up to 2G prior to impact. Freezing temperatures made access to the crash debris difficult. Portable heaters were used to melt ice left in the wake of the firefighting efforts. Human remains were carefully removed and then finally identified over a period of several weeks. The cockpit has sustained the greatest impact force, while the main cabin was mostly destroyed by the ensuing fire. Passengers in the rear section were still strapped in their seats. The autopilot was in control until automatically disconnected when the stall warning sticker shaker activated. The NTSB found no evidence of severe icing conditions, which would have required the pilots to fly manually. Colgan recommended its pilots to fly manual in icing conditions and required them to do so in service ice and severe icing conditions. In December 2008, the NTSB issued a safety bulletin about the danger of keeping the autopilot engaged during icing conditions. Flying the plane manually was essential to ensure pilots would be able to detect changes in the handling characteristics of the airplane, which are warning signs of ice accumulation. After the captain reacted inappropriately to the stick shaker, the stick pusher activated. As designed, it pushed the nose down when it sensed a stall was imminent. But the captain again reacted improperly and overrode the additional safety device by pulling back again on the control column, causing the plane to stall and crash. Bill Voss, president of Flight Safety Foundation, told USA Today that it sounded like the plane was in a deep stall situation. On May 11, 2009, information was released about Captain Renslow's training record. According to an article in the Wall Street Journal, before joining Colgan, he had failed three check rides, including some at Gulfstream International's training program, and people close to the investigation suggested that he might not have been adequately trained to respond to the emergency that led to the airplane's fatal descent. Investigators examined possible crew fatigue. The captain appeared to have been at Newark Airport overnight prior to the day of the 9:18 p.m. departure of the accident flight. The first officer commuted from Seattle to Newark on an overnight flight. These findings during the investigation led the FAA to issue a call to action for improvements in the practices of regional characters. Another press report said that the pilot had failed five prior tests and also alleged flirtatious conversation in the cockpit between the pilot and the much younger first officer. In response to questioning from the NTSB, Colgan Air officials acknowledged both pilots apparently were not paying close attention to the aircraft's instruments and did not properly follow the airplane's procedures for handling an impending stall. I believe Captain Renslow did have intentions of landing safely at Buffalo, as well as First Officer Shaw, but obviously, in those last few moments, the flight instruments were not being monitored, and that's an indication of a lack of situational awareness, said John Barrett, Colgan's Director of Flight Standards. The official transcript of the crew's communication, obtained from the CVR, as well as an animated depiction of the crash constructed using data from the FDR, were made available to the public on May 12, 2009. Some of the crew's communication violated federal rules banning non-essential conversation. On June 3, 2009, the New York Times published an article detailing complaints about Colgan's operations from an FAA inspector who observed test flights in January 2008. As a previous FAA incident handling other inspectors' complaints, the Colgan inspector's complaints were deferred and the inspector was demoted. The incident is under investigation by the Office of Special Counsel, the agency responsible for U.S. government federal whistleblower complaints. On August 5, 2009, the OSC released a report stating that the inspector's removal from the Colgan inspection team was proper. On February 2, 2010, the NTSB issued its final report describing the details of its investigation that led to 46 specific conclusions. One conclusion determined that both the captain and the first officer were fatigued at the time of the accident, but the NTSB could not determine how much it degraded their performance. The pilot's performance was likely impaired because of fatigue, but the extent of their impairment and the degree to which it contributed to the performance deficiencies that occurred during the flight cannot be conclusively determined, it stated. Among these conclusions were the fact that both the captain and the first officer responded to the stall warning in a manner contrary to their training. The NTSB could not explain why the first officer reacted or retracted the flaps and suggested that the landing gear should also be retracted, though it did find that the current approach stall training was not adequate. The current air carrier approach to stall training did not fully prepare the flight crew for an unexpected stall in the Q400 and did not address the actions that are needed to recover from a fully developed stall. Those findings were immediately followed by the board's probable cause statement, the captain's inappropriate response to the activation of the stick shaker, which led to an aerodynamic stall from which the airplane did not recover. Contributing to the accident were the flight crew's failure to monitor airspeed in relation to the rising position of the low-speed queue, the flight crew's failure to adhere to sterile cockpit procedures, the captain's failure to effectively manage the flight, and Colgan Air's inadequate procedures for airspeed selection and management during approaches in icing conditions. NTSB Chairman Deborah Hirschman, while concurring, made it clear that she considered fatigue to be a contributing factor. She compared the 20 years that fatigue had remained on the NTSB's most wanted list of transportation safety improvements, during which no meaningful action was taken by regulators in response. The change in tolerance for alcohol over the same period, noting that the impact on performance and fatigue and alcohol were similar. However, Vice Chairman Christopher A. Hart and Board Member Robert L. Sumwalt III dissented on the inclusion of fatigue as a contributing factor on the grounds that evidence was insufficient to support such a conclusion. Notably, the same kind of pilot errors and standard operating procedure violations had been found in other accidents where fatigue was not a factor. To state that fatigue was a contributing factor and thus part of the probable cause would be inconsistent with the above finding and would therefore disrupt this flow of logic. I did not feel, therefore, nor did the board's majority, that we had sufficient information or evidence to conclude that fatigue should be part of probable cause in this accident. The FAA has postponed or implemented several rule changes as a result of Flight 3407. In areas ranging from pilot fatigue to airline transport pilot certificate qualifications of up to 1,500 hours of flight experience for both pilot and co-pilot. One of the most significant changes has already taken effect, changing the way examiners grade check rides in flight simulators during stalls. Investigators also scrutinized the practical test standards for ATP certification, which allowed for an altitude loss of no more than 100 feet. In a simulated stall, the NTSB theorized that due to this low tolerance in a test simulation environment, pilots may have come to fear loss of altitude in a stall, and this focused primarily on preventing such a loss, even to the detriment of recovering from the stall itself. New standards subsequently issued by the FAA eliminate any specific altitude loss stipulation, calling instead for a minimal loss of elevation in a stall. One examiner has told an aviation magazine that he is not allowed to fail any applicant for losing altitude in a simulated stall, so long as the pilot is able to regain the original altitude. This is not unusual, since the standard recovery procedures for recovering from a stall involve trading some altitude for speed, and this is why it is considered much more important to not stall in the first place at low altitude. In February 2019, to mark the 10th anniversary of the crash, ceremonies were held in Buffalo and the surrounding area in remembrance of the victims. Well, I guess there's some learning from mistakes going on here, but it does seem that after crashes quite often and things of that nature, it's like, okay, we're going to implement this. We're going to get this going in 3 or 4 years. It's like, well, the planes are still in the sky. People are still, you know, doing this or that. Why do we wait so long for some of these things? But, you know, nonetheless, several people lost their lives on this one.
So the prior story we heard about sounds as though it was a good flight crew, but they just got put into a situation that they had no experience of how to correct. Mm-hmm. This situation was a combination of I'm basically in zombie mode because I'm tired. I'm in a different time zone. This flight has already been delayed 2 hours. All I want to do is sleep. And perhaps the person I want to sleep with is my first officer.
The 24-year-old sitting next to me with her hands.
Hey-o.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, pay no attention to those alarms. That's my heart beating out of my chest.
That's the red light special. All through the
Hold on. Let me pump some Lionel Richie into the cockpit. That's right. Oh, shit. That's going over. That's going over the all call. All night long. Sorry, folks. Just getting a little antsy in my pantsy up here. That's all right. We're on final approach. We'll be dying momentarily.
God. Relating to the building that they crashed into on the ground, and you're just sitting
pizza's
there.
Pizza's done.
Yeah.
And a plane hits the bungalow.
Here's a theory. Here's another odd one for you. You talked about the craziness of the 9/11 widow that was on this plane. Here's one totally different flight. Have you ever heard of a flight that crashes into a flight simulator?
I'll tell you what, Tony, if I had a nickel for every time a plane hit a flight simulator, well, I wouldn't have a nickel.
You got one nickel. It happened.
What?
When I was in Wichita, it happened. I don't know if it was Boeing or Cessna. It was one of the airline places.
That makes sense because there's a lot of, Boeing's got a huge operation there.
It was the flight training center. And I mean, granted it is near a runway. But there were people in the simulator training and a plane crashed into the building with the simulators into a simulator. And, I believe some of the people in there lost their life. I know one of them got out and was severely injured. But how fucking confusing would that be? You're in the simulator and it literally is crashed into by an airplane.
What do you do on that one? I mean, I can understand from the standpoint of location, you're training pilots here, and then in a very close proximity, said pilots that are training, you actually have to fly the plane. So in theory, similarly to firefighting recruits who die of in a fire that's very close to their training facility, I guess it makes sense.
It's another, like, added to the bizarreness. Yeah, another thing of bizarreness of the city of Wichita. That city has so many weird things. I mean, you can make a whole fucking, like, series on it. Maybe
so the title of this episode is Plane Crashes with a undertone of Wichita, ..
No, I mean, just that. That was just the one. I mean, I talked about living on a flight path, but that's about it. But no, That was a weird one of the plane crashing into the flight simulator. It's like,
and
seriously?
It's interesting. Do you have the black box of the last words of the pilot? We're not in Kansas anymore.
I don't know what the black box said, but that was. I remember I was on the air when that happened, and it was like break. Like there's a plane crash into the flight simulator. Like what?
What is interesting in all these flights, and not sure the specifics on that situation, is you often, if you ever watch documentaries or you really study the craft of a pilot, you notice how they are so focused on details and the walk around the plane. And when you even board a plane, you see pilots. Very rarely do you see them just chumming it up. They're always looking at notes. They're always looking at their... Because plane crashes usually don't happen because an engine falls off. Plane crashes usually happen because the 842nd detail is overlooked.
Yeah.
And that the smallest of smallest, and that's why, I mean, it's so sad, but you have to think to yourself, you do your job, you do your profession. Every day I overlook a detail, and usually it's just a quick fix. Whereas if you're a pilot and you are responsible for, I mean, you know, upwards of 300-400 souls, if you sneeze wrong, you're dead.
Yeah.
So it is, it's scary, but at the same time, I think we have two differing views. As many flights as there are throughout the world, every minute of every day, and the amount of crashes there are, it's still,
it's safer,
in my opinion, so much safer.
Oh, it is.
Than hitting an Uber, you know, down the road.
It is. I mean, factually, yeah, statistically, 100%. I mean, it's all psychological because one, you're way up in the sky, and the other, you're on the ground. And that's a comfort thing. That's not a statistical thing. But no, you're 100% right. Statistically, flying is, I don't know how many times safer, but much safer than being on the ground amongst the gazillions of drivers you're going to pass if you were to go from, Seattle to New York. I mean, the amount of dangerous drivers you will pass, the amount of drunk drivers, the amount of drug addict drivers, the amount of inattentive drivers that you don't crash into, but you very well could have had you time not worked out correctly, statistically dramatically higher. But when you're an airplane, your odds are much, much higher for survival. But it's just a matter of comfort more than anything else.
And from what it sounds like, your level of comfort, your level of control, even if you have to dodge 13 more yeah. possible accidents, you can dodge them opposed mm-hmm. to the one holy fuck moment while you're a passenger and you can't grab the yoke.
I think that's why I feel more comfortable driving, quite honestly, is because I feel like I'm in a little bit more control. Now, I can't control the one that's coming over the center line and flying at my vehicle. I suppose I can veer, but, some things you just can't control. So I think that's why I prefer driving over flying. But honestly, my biggest thing against flying right now, and if this were fixed, I would be flying. It is just the utter amount of delays, the staffing issues that they have, the overbooking issues that they have, the connection issues that they have, and the lack of, I don't want to say care, it's more so resources to correct those things in a timely manner that would not affect trying to get from point A to point B. Because I can say the last, I don't know, 3-4 flights I've been on in a row, something's gotten fucked up along the way. My last one was the worst. Landing in, like, literally, I was supposed to be in Kentucky, like, in the center of Kentucky to do a live show. And I landed on the East Coast in the Carolinas. And I had about 14 hours to get to my destination to hit the stage. So what did I get to do? Because the next flight wasn't going to take off for another 10 hours, and there was no guarantee I was getting on that flight. I got to go and get the rental car, and I got to explore the Appalachian Mountains and a weird KFC that was somewhere in the middle of them and keep driving until I eventually got to my city with absolutely zero energy left and was completely tired. And the only thing that got me through being on stage was having several cocktails to kind of give me a little bit of a second wind and not recognize how utterly exhausted I was. But holy shit, that was torture. So,
Tony, tell us how you truly feel about the airline industry.
It sucks. I mean, there's lots of good people in there, but there's a lot of issues. And right now, there's tons of delays going on as of the recording of this, we're in the middle of July of 2021, because everybody's coming back from COVID. They're trying to get, crew back. They're trying to get pilots back. And it's not just a matter of, oh, come on back, start just tomorrow, you can fly. A lot of them, you haven't been in the sky for a long time, so you got to go back for more certification. and there's flights being delayed left and right. And I'm supposed to go across the country here in a couple weeks. And like everyone I've talked to that's flown in the last month, there's been a delay. There's been something that's taken them dramatically longer than it should.
Now, if I'm understanding correctly here, somebody had to fly to do a show?
Yeah.
I would imagine that somebody can just charter a plane.
Yeah, right. How do you charter a plane when you'd be paying more money than you would for that show, for what you're making?
Come on, everybody. We're just going to drive up to the airplane.
Yeah.
Hop off, up the stairs, good to go.
Can you imagine? I don't know how much it costs to charter a plane, but I'd probably be in debt if I did that.
It is. If anybody ever asks you, what would you do with $1 million? I would buy a plane and I would put two pilots on staff.
And you'd be out $1 million in about 2 weeks.
But that would be a great 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I figure you can buy a plane. You can buy a plane, a jet for, I mean, you probably find one on Facebook Marketplace for like $300,000.
Sure.
So that's still, you know, and then fuel.
Your fuel is what?
1 year?
You would go through your fuel. You'd go your $300,000 of fuel in very, very quick time.
I mean, again, if I owned the plane, I probably could, and I'd have to look into insurance, but I could, you know, charge people. I could charge you because you don't want to end up on the East Coast
so
and
you
drive
would,
back to Kentucky.
You would start your own airline on $1 million is what you're telling me.
Not an airline, a service.
A private, where, okay, yeah.
So I already have the pilots on staff.
Mm-hmm.
I already have the plane. You just have to get clearance. But this is boring stuff because hopefully our plane would not crash. So it would not apply to this episode. But if you love flying, and those tuning in, clearly you do, or at least you're curious mm-hmm. about it.
You know,
I mean, hell.
I know there's two pilots that did this for a while, Brian Hackett and Joe Hackett. They had a little airline off of the coast on Nantucket. And I believe, I don't know if they're still flying or not. I think Lowell was the mechanic. He was kind of a questionable dude. But it was a little airline. I think Sandpiper Air was what it was called.
Is this a joke?
It's Wings. Wings on NBC.
For the negative four people who got that joke, about halfway through, I thought this may have been recorded on April 1st.
Did you watch Wings?
No.
Oh,
and I think not a lot of people did. Because
they did. It had 8 seasons. It was on after Cheers. It got a lot of viewers. But everyone who watched it was probably over 40 now. But
you know, as my mother said, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Go back and watch Wings. It was a good show. I think you can stream it somewhere. We got one more chapter here. The final chapter, we're going to be looking at China Airlines Flight 140. Had somewhat similar conditions and issues. You want to hear that? Become a Dark Sider. Sign up for that at patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia or search Dark Side of Wikipedia on Patreon. And to help keep us on the air, you'll get access to that, as well as all of our episodes, advanced episodes, all of it ad-free. Again, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. Sean and myself, we'll see you over there.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains August 15th through the 18th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At WashableSofas.com, you'll find the Annabay Sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Annabay has you covered. Visit WashableSofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill, pets shed, and accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at WashableSofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit WashableSofas.com today and save. That's WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit WashableSofas.com and discover Annabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Annabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Annabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink-in feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit WashableSofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabay Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out WashableSofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabay sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change, and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at WashableSofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit WashableSofas.com today and save. That's WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change, and certain restrictions may apply.